That is a grim, unlucky place. Some call it cursed. Let them, Lord Tywin said. Unleash Sir Gregor and send him before us with his reavers. Send forth Vargo Holt and his free riders as well, and Sir Aemery Lorch. Each is to have 300 horse. Tell them I want to see the river hands of fire from the Guard's Eye to the Red Fork. They will burn, my lord, Sir Kevin said, rising. I shall give the commands. He bowed and made for the door. When they were alone, Lord Tywin glanced at Tyrion. Your savages might relish a bit of rapine. Tell them they may ride with Vargo Holt and plunder as they like. Good stock, women. They may take what they want and burn the rest.
Telling a shagger and timid how to pillage is like telling a rooster how to crow, Tyrion commented. But I should prefer to keep them with me.
Uncouth and unruly they might be, yet the wildlings were his, and he trusted them more than any of his father's men. He was not about to hand them over.
Then you had better learn to control them. I will not have the city plundered.
The city?
Tyrion was lost.
What city would that be?
King's Landing. I am sending you to court.
It was the last thing Tyrion Lannister would ever have anticipated. He reached for his wine and considered for a moment as he sipped.
And what am I to do there?
Rule, his father said curtly.
Tyrion hooted with laughter.
My sweet sister might have a word or two to say about that.
Let her say what she likes. Her son needs to be taken in hand before he ruins us all. I blame those jackanapes on the council, our friend Petyr, the venerable Grand Maester, and that cockless wonder, Lord Varys. What sort of counsel are they giving Joffrey when he lurches from one folly to the next? Whose notion was it to make this Janus Slint a lord? Huh? The man's father was a butcher, and they grant him Harrenhal? Harrenhal, that was the seat of kings. Not that he will ever set foot inside it, if I have any say. I'm told he took a bloody spear for his sigil. A bloody cleaver would have been my choice.
His father had not raised his voice, yet Tyrion could see the anger in the gold of his eyes.
And dismissing Selmy, where was the sense in that? Yes, the man was old, but the name of Barristan the Bold still has meaning in the realm. He lent honour to any man he served. Can anyone say the same of the Hound? You feed your dog bones under the table. You do not seat him beside you on the eye bench.
He pointed a finger at Tyrion's face.
If Cersei cannot curb the boy, you must. And if these counsellors are playing us false...
Tyrion knew.
Spikes, he sighed. Heads, walls.
I see that you've taken a few lessons from me.
More than you know, father.
Tyrion answered quietly. He finished his wine and set the cup aside, thoughtful. A part of him was more pleased than he cared to admit. Another part was remembering the battle upriver, and wondering if he was being sent to hold the left again.
Why me? He asked, cocking his head to one side. Why not my uncle? Why not Sir Adam, or Sir Flemont, or Lord Serret? Why not a bigger man?
Lord Tywin rose abruptly. You are my son.
That was when he knew.
You have given him up for lost, he thought. You bloody bastard. You think Jaime is good as dead, so I'm all you have left.
Tyrion wanted to slap him, to spit in his face, to draw his dagger and cut the heart out of him, and see if it was made of old hard gold, the way the small folk said. Yet he sat there, silent and still. The shards of the broken cup crunched beneath his father's heels as Lord Tywin crossed the room.
One last thing, he said at the door. You will not take the whore to court.
Tyrion sat alone in the common room for a long while after his father was gone.
Finally, he climbed the steps to his cozy garret beneath the bell tower. The ceiling was low, but that was scarcely a drawback for a dwarf. From the window, he could see the gibbet his father had erected in the yard. The innkeep's body turned slowly on its rope whenever the night wind gusted. Her flesh had grown as thin and ragged as Lannister hopes. Shay murmured sleepily and rolled toward him when he sat on the edge of the feather bed. He slid his hand under the blanket and cupped a soft breast, and her eyes opened.
"My lord," she said with a drowsy smile.
When he felt her nipple stiffen, Tyrion kissed her.
"I have a mind to take you to King's Landing, sweetling," he whispered.
John. The mare whickered softly as John Snow tightened the cinch.
"Easy, sweet lady,"
he said in a soft voice, quieting her with a touch. Wind whispered through the stable, a cold, dead breath on his face, but John paid it no mind. He strapped his roll to the saddle, his scarred fingers stiff and clumsy.
"Ghost," he called softly, "to me."
And the wolf was there, eyes like embers.
"John, please, you must not do this."
He mounted, the reins in his hand, and wheeled the horse round to face the night. Samuel Tarley stood in the stable door, a full moon peering over his shoulder. He threw a giant shadow, immense and black. "Get out of my way, Sam."
"John, you can't," Sam said. "I won't let you."
"I would sooner not hurt you," John told him. "Move aside, Sam, or I'll ride you down."
"You won't. You have to listen to me, please."
John put his spurs to horse flesh, and the mare bolted for the door. For an instant, Sam stood his ground, his face as round and pale as the moon behind him, his mouth a widening O of surprise. At the last moment, when they were almost on him, he jumped aside, as John had known he would, stumbled and fell. The mare leapt over him, out into the night. John raised the hood of his heavy cloak and gave the horse her head. Castle Black was silent and still as he rode out, with Ghost racing at his side. Men watched from the wall behind him, he knew, but their eyes were turned north, not south. No one would see him go. No one but Sam Tarley, struggling back to his feet in the dust of the old stables. He hoped Sam hadn't hurt himself, falling like that. He was so heavy and so ungainly, it would be just like him to break a wrist or twist his ankle getting out of the way.
"I warned him," John said aloud. "It was nothing to do with him, anyway."
He flexed his burned hand as he rode, opening and closing the scarred fingers. They still pained him, but it felt good to have the wrappings off. Moonlight silvered the hills as he followed the twisting ribbon of the King's Road. He needed to get as far from the wall as he could before they realized he was gone. On the morrow he would leave the road and strike out overland, through field and bush and stream, to throw off pursuit, but for the moment speed was more important than deception. It was not as though they would not guess where he was going. The old bear was accustomed to rise at first light, so John had until dawn to put as many leagues as he could between himself and the wall. If Sam Tarley did not betray him. The fat boy was dutiful and easily frightened, but he loved John like a brother. If questioned, Sam would doubtless tell them the truth, but John could not imagine him braving the guards in front of the King's Tower to wake Mormont from sleep. When John did not appear to fetch the old bear's breakfast from the kitchen, they'd look in his cell and find Longclaw on the bed. Been hard to abandon it, but John was not so lost to honor as to take it with him. Even Jorah Mormont had not done that when he fled in disgrace. Doubtless Lord Mormont would find someone more worthy of the blade. John felt bad when he thought of the old man. He knew his desertion would be salt in the still raw wound of his son's disgrace. That seemed a poor way to repay him for his trust, but It couldn't be helped. No matter what he did, John felt as though he were betraying someone. Even now, he did not know if he was doing the honorable thing. The Southern had it easier. They had their septons to talk to, someone to tell them the gods will, and help sort out right from wrong. But the Starks worshipped the old gods, the nameless gods, and if the heart trees heard, they did not speak. When the last lights of Castle Black vanished behind him, John slowed his mare to a walk. He had a long journey ahead, and only the one horse to see him through. There were holdfasts and farming villages along the road south, where he might be able to trade the mare for a fresh mount when he needed one, but not if she were injured or blown. He would need to find new clothes soon. Most like he'd need to steal them. He was clad in black from head to heel. High leather riding boots, rough-spun breeches and tunic, sleeveless leather jerkin, and heavy wool cloak. His long sword and dagger were sheathed in black moleskin, and his hauberk and coif in his saddlebag were black ringmail. Any bit of it could mean his death if he were taken. A stranger wearing black was viewed with cold suspicion in every village and holdfast north of the Neck, and men would soon be watching for him. Once Maester Aemon's ravens took flight, John knew he would find no safe haven, not even at Winterfell. Bran might want to let him in, but Maester Lewin had better sense. He would bar the gates and send John away, as he should. Better not to call there at all. Yet he saw the castle clear in his mind's eye, as if he had left it only yesterday, the towering granite walls, the great hall, with its smells of smoke and dog and roasting meat, his father Solar, the turret room where he had slept. Part of him wanted nothing so much as to hear Bran laugh again, to sup on one of Gage's beef and bacon pies, to listen to old Nan tell her tales of the children of the forest and Florian the Fool. But he had not left the wall for that. He had left because he was, after all, his father's son and Rob's brother. The gift of a sword, even a sword as fine as Longclaw, did not make him a Mormont. Nor was he Aemon Targaryen. 3 times the old man had chosen, and 3 times he had chosen honor. But that was him. Even now, John could not decide whether the maester had stayed because he was weak and craven, or because he was strong and true. Yet he understood what the old man had meant about the pain of choosing. He understood that all too well. Tyrion Lannister had claimed that most men would rather deny a hard truth than face it. But John was done with denials. He was who he was. John Snow. Bastard. An oathbreaker. Motherless, friendless, and damned. For the rest of his life, however long that might be, he would be condemned to be an outsider, the silent man standing in the shadows who dares not speak his true name. Wherever he might go throughout the 7 kingdoms, he would need to live a lie, lest every man's hand be raised against him. But it made no matter, so long as he lived long enough to take his place by his brother's side and help avenge his father. He remembered Rob, as he had last seen him, standing in the yard with snow melting in his auburn hair. John would have to come to him in secret, disguised. He tried to imagine the look on Rob's face when he revealed himself. His brother would shake his head and smile, and he'd say... He could not see the smile. Hard as he tried, he could not see it. He found himself thinking of the deserter his father had beheaded the day they found the direwolves. "You said the words," Lord Eddard had told him. "You took the vow before your brothers, before the old gods and the new." Desmond and Fat Tom had dragged the man to the stump. Bran's eyes had been wide as saucers, and John had to remind him to keep his pony in hand. He remembered the look on Father's face when Theon Greyjoy brought forth ice, the spray of blood on the snow, the way Theon had kicked the head when it came rolling at his feet. He wondered what Lord Eddard might have done if the deserter had been his brother Benjen, instead of that ragged stranger. Would it have been any different? It must. Surely. Surely. And Rob would welcome him, for a certainty. He had to. Or else. It did not bear thinking about. Pain throbbed deep in his fingers as he clutched the reins. John put his heels into his horse and broke into a gallop, racing down the King's Road, as if to outrun his doubts. John was not afraid of death, but he did not want to die like that, trussed and bound and beheaded like a common brigand. If he must perish, let it be with a sword in his hand, fighting his father's killers. He was no true Stark, had never been one, but he could die like one. Let them say that Eddard Stark had fathered four sons, not three. Ghost kept pace with them for almost half a mile, red tongue lulling from his mouth. Man and horse alike lowered their heads as he asked the mare for more speed. The wolf slowed, stopped, watching, his eyes glowing red in the moonlight. He vanished behind, but John knew he would follow, at his own pace. Scattered lights flickered through the trees ahead of him, on both sides of the road. Mole's Town. A dog barked as he rode through, and he heard a mule's raucous honk from the stable. But otherwise, the village was still. Here and there the glow of hearth fires shone through shuttered windows, leaking between wooden slats, but only a few. Mole's Town was bigger than it seemed, but three-quarters of it was under the ground, in deep, warm cellars connected by a maze of tunnels. Even the whorehouse was down there. Nothing on the surface but a wooden shack no bigger than a privy with a red lantern hung above the door. On the wall he'd heard men call the whores buried treasures. He wondered whether any of his brothers in black were down there tonight, mining. That was oath-breaking, too, yet no one seemed to care. Not until he was well beyond the village did John slow again. By then both he and the mare were damp with sweat. He dismounted, shivering, his burnt hand aching. A bank of melting snow lay under the trees, bright in the moonlight, water trickling off to form small, shallow pools. John squatted and brought his hands together, cupping the runoff between his fingers. The snow melt was icy cold. He drank and splashed some on his face until his cheeks tingled. His fingers were throbbing worse than they had in days, and his head was pounding too. "I am doing the right thing," he told himself, "so why do I feel so bad?" The horse was well lathered, so John took the lead and walked her for a while. The road was scarcely wide enough for two riders to pass abreast, its surface cut by tiny streams and littered with stone. That run had been truly stupid, an invitation to a broken neck. John wondered what had gotten into him. Was he in such a great rush to die? Off in the trees, the distant scream of some frightened animal made him look up. His mare whinnied nervously. Had his wolf found some prey? He cupped his hands around his mouth. "Ghost!" he shouted. "Ghost! To me!" The only answer was a rush of wings behind him as an owl took flight. Frowning, John continued on his way. He led the mare for half an hour until she was dry. Ghost did not appear. John wanted to mount up and ride again, but he was concerned about his missing wolf. "Ghost!" he called again. "Where are you?" "To me! Ghost!" Nothing in these woods could trouble a direwolf, even a half-grown direwolf, unless... No. Ghost was too smart to attack a bear, and if there was a wolf pack anywhere close, John would have surely heard them howling. He should eat, he decided. Food would settle his stomach and give Ghost a chance to catch up. There was no danger yet. Castle Black still slept. In his saddlebag he found a biscuit, a piece of cheese, a small withered brown apple. He'd brought salt beef as well, and a rasher of bacon he'd filched from the kitchens, but he would save the meat for the morrow. After it was gone, he'd need to hunt, and that would slow him. John sat under the trees and ate his biscuit and cheese while his mare grazed along the King's Road. He kept the apple for last. It had gone a little soft, but the flesh was still tart and juicy. He was down to the core when he heard the sounds. Horses. And from the north. Quickly, John leapt up and strode to his mare. Could he outrun them? No, they were too close. They'd hear him for a certainty, and if they were from Castle Black... He led the mare off the road behind a thick stand of grey-green sentinels. "Quiet now," he said in a hushed voice, crouching down to peer through the branches. If the guards were kind, the riders would pass by. Likely as not, they were only small folk from Molestown, farmers on their way to the fields, although what they were doing out in the middle of the night... He listened to the sound of hooves growing steadily louder as they trotted briskly down the King's Road. From the sound, there were five or six of them, at the least. Their voices drifted through the trees.
"Certainly came this way."
"We can't be certain. He could have ridden east, for all you know, or left the road to cut through the woods. That's what I'd do.
In the dark, stupid. If you didn't fall off your horse and break your neck, you'd get lost, and wind up back at the wall. When the sun came up, I would not."
Gren sounded peeved.
"I'd just ride south. You can tell south by the stars."
"What if the sky was cloudy?" Pip asked.
"Well, then I wouldn't go."
Another voice broke in.
"You know where I'd be, if it was me. I'd be in Molestown, digging for buried treasure."
Toad's shrill laughter boomed through the trees. John's mare snorted.
"Keep quiet, all of you,"
Alder said.
"I thought I heard something."
"Where? I didn't hear anything."
The horses stopped.
"You can't hear yourself fart."
"I can too," Gren insisted. "Quiet."
They all fell silent, listening. John found himself holding his breath.
Sam, he thought.
He hadn't gone to the old bear, but he hadn't gone to bed either. He'd woken the other boys.
Damn them all.
Come dawn, if they were not in their beds, they'd be named deserters too. What did they think they were doing? The hushed silence seemed to stretch on and on. From where John crouched, he could see the legs of their horses through the branches. Finally, Pip spoke up.
"What did you hear?"
"I don't know," Alder admitted. "A sound, I thought. It might have been a horse, but
there's nothing here."
Out of the corner of his eye, John glimpsed a pale shape moving through the trees. Leaves rustled, and ghosts came bounding out of the shadows, so suddenly that John's mare started and gave a whinny.
"There!"
Alder shouted.
"I heard it too."
"Traitor,"
John told the direwolf as he swung up into the saddle. He turned the mare's head to slide off through the trees, but they were on him before he had gone 10 feet.
"John!"
Pip shouted after him.
"Pull up," Gren said. "You can't outrun us all."
John wheeled around to face them, drawing his sword.
"Get back. I don't wish to hurt you, but I will if I have to." "One against seven,"
Alder gave the signal. The boys spread out, surrounding him.
"What do you want with me?" John demanded. "We want to take you back where you belong," Pip said. "I belong with my brother." "Where are your brothers now?" Gren said. "They'll cut off your head if they catch you, you know," Tut put in with a nervous laugh. "This is so stupid, it's like something the Oryx would do."
"I would not," Gren said. "I'm no oath-breaker. I said the words and I meant them."
"So did I," John told them. "Don't you understand? They murdered my father. It's war. My brother Rob is fighting in the Riverlands."
"We know," Pip said solemnly. "Sam told us everything." "We're sorry about your father," Gren said. "But it doesn't matter. Once you say the words, you can't leave, no matter what."
"I have to," John said fervently.
"You said the words," Pip reminded him. "Now my watch begins. You said it. It shall not end until my death."
"I shall live and die at my post," Gren said, nodding. "You don't have to tell me the words. I know them as well as you do." He was angry now. Why couldn't they let him go in peace? They were only making it harder. "I am the sword in the darkness,"